You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1, the show with nonstop chirps.
I went burgundy on everybody, and it was all Al's fault. I hate to point fingers, but it was all Al.
Yeah, like that's on Al.
Right. I mean, I'm just a professional broadcaster here. What do you want out of me?
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
All right, we got our buddy Craig Buttons in here. We haven't seen Craig in a while. Been friend of the show week because we had Johnny in on Monday, we had Jonas in here yesterday, and now the big shooter rolls in, and it's Craig.
I'm not the big shooter.
I think you are.
Yeah. The biggest shooter.
I like to have Jonas and O in the same time.
Well, O gets after him.
I know.
I don't know how many times when I'm calling a game on the road, whether it's a Thursday or something, I get notes on Twitter saying O is attacking. O wants to kill Jonas. O is attacking Jonas. Jonas hasn't said a word in 10 minutes. Like, I don't know. I don't know what goes on. I know at least when you're in the building, Craig, like you and Brian have spirited debates. You know, Johnny, I think, can hold his own. Johnny has a lot of fun. I mean, we've had Dutchie. We've had a lot of roving guests
when
I haven't been here doing color. And now O is out of the building for a couple days. So we've had this is actually quite exciting for me.
Oh, you're very excited about this.
I don't mind it.
But what I think is the fact that you and O beat Jonas at trivia, right? At this twice. I know, two times, right?
Don't forget, Craig, two times.
Like, you have the crowd. You don't have to sit there and go after him on the air or anything.
That's right.
Like, just, you got the crowd.
Here's the thing, though. I witnessed the one. I will say this. I think O is smart like a fox. You know, he hangs in the weeds and he knows a lot. But I think Brian was the catalyst in that duo. Because Jonas, I thought, was almost like O and Masters were kind of in the background just to fill in space.
Well, Masters was talking the biggest smack.
I know. This guy was talking like he was a Harvard grad. I don't know. Has Masters come from money?
I kind of sense that maybe his
because
parents pulled the investment.
He visited the Harvard campus once.
Well, I was just going to say, maybe his parents, if he went to a highbrow school, maybe his parents were in on that sting yesterday.
I think there's a very good chance that the Masters family was paying some D-bag down in L.A. to get him into university.
Let's not take shots at Mark. I love him.
I'm willing to go down that road because I saw it twice.
Are you kidding me?
Awful.
Like what he did with the upgrade, he like, as long as time exists, he will never be able to downplay it.
Right.
Like, on his, if he has a tombstone, it will say, "Here lies the guy who upgraded himself."
Over his wife.
But I don't know how many times, and Craig, you fly a ton, like, people will recognize me from the show or recognize me from TSN and be like, if I'm not flying business class, they're like, why didn't you Masters it? Like, it's kind of like become a thing.
And doesn't that scream privilege? It screams a privileged upbringing. I want a full investigation into what university Masters went to and how he got in there. How did they cook the books? Because based on what I saw twice.
On the trivia,
there's no chance that guy could get into university on his own.
It may be
right now on the radio.
What's the online? The Phoenix College? There's a few. I took a few online courses.
The big one up here is Athabasca.
The University of Athabasca.
That's the big one.
I had two courses.
Out in Alberta. Yeah. Not that it matters.
No, but it's
online,
in Alberta. It's a gritty
Is there a campus?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think there is.
No, Athabasca is a city just north of Edmonton.
So it's just like a factory somewhere. It's an empty room with a phone in there.
It's a house with just a couple phones and a mailbox that you can send the checks to.
Actually, I do think they have some classrooms. I mean, they're the ones that do the Business of Hockey Institute that have started the hockey MBA, you know, Brian Burke and Rich Winter.
Is that right?
Yeah, so, you know, trying to make sure they can give people an opportunity to learn the business of hockey. So, you know, there's a lot. I mean, online learning now is really a significant thing for big MBA programs. Exactly. Online learning, and, you know, that's how you do it. You don't go to the campus. You might go for a period of time, but all in all, you're not going to classes.
I just Googled it. There is a campus, and it looks like quite a nice building, although there's like a tractor in front of it. So
why would that be the sales pitch? Why would you have a tractor?
Well, I don't
in front
know what that is.
Campus?
Maybe that's just some sort of
Alberta. It's like a steel. It's like a steel
I don't know what
that is. You don't ride your tractor,
statue,
get an MBA.
But
get
it is a, it's a real school, and I would go to it if I needed secondary education.
Well, listen, you're right, though, about online activity. That's where the whole world is going. Mm-hmm. No one wants to leave their house.
No.
Nobody wants to be, no one has to be forced to do anything. You can get everything online.
There's people panicking right now because Facebook and Instagram have been offline for about 4 hours.
Which is a real shame because of all these influencers, that's how they make a living, including Lori Loughlin's daughter, I guess, who was caught up. Yeah, apparently she's an Instagram influencer, which I don't think anyone could truly define. No one knows what you're influencing or what you're doing. Basically, you're posting selfies.
Yeah, they walk around and go, okay, I like this Diet Coke. Hey, take a look at what I'm doing right now. It's at 4:05
And what kind of money do they make? Do they get paid to do that?
I don't know. I just...
It's got to be on views, right? Advertising's got to be based on views.
It must be. I mean, you hear about these YouTube guys that sit and play Fortnite and people watch them and
they make
millions.
They make a fortune doing it.
Well,
a
that's
fortune.
Gaming.
That's gaming, but it's online. Like, I know for a fact, like, my daughter, who's 6 years old, and I had to be online. I mean, I will admit this. I was going to bring this to the table. I've been alone this week, and I don't know if I've bought. I've bought 15 things off of Amazon like that. It's actually quite. It's addicting.
It's very terrifying.
I bought Italian spices, and for some reason, I've got a Prime account. Yeah. They were delivered like. I ordered them Sunday. They were delivered by like Monday morning.
Yeah, my understanding is the whole Prime, you don't really need it.
Well, if you want free, it's delivery. It's free delivery,
right.
And it's like instantaneous.
But it's free because it's quick. If you're willing to say, you know, come in a week, I don't care. It's still going to be free, is my understanding.
Yeah,
right.
So if you operate a business, then you need it because you need that kind of stuff quick. But if you're, I don't think you needed the Italian spices last night.
I didn't need the Italian spices or the AA batteries. Like I was going through my house, and instead of going to the store, I didn't even make one big order. I've made 8 separate orders. I don't know why because I'm an idiot.
That's why Jeff Bezos is $34.5 billion richer than Bill Gates.
Yeah, it's
$34.5 billion richer. He's the Tampa Bay Lightning of rich guys. he's lapping the field.
He is. Now, he's going to have to give some of that back, apparently, with the divorce on the horizon.
Apparently, that is coming, and I would guess that's going to cut him
down.
I think him and his wife will both be worth more than Bill Gates.
Yes,
they're both
going to
be worth a lot of money.
What's Bill Gates' wife's name? Miranda?
I don't know.
I'm not in that stratosphere. I actually have a buddy who, like,
is acquaintances
with Bill Gates. Like, he's called me. I'm at Bill's house at a barbecue. I'm like, what are you doing there? Like, you shouldn't be there. You're a degenerate. But he, you know, through a friend of a friend, knows the guy.
Well, that
which
would
is
be a
weird.
Good hookup, I would think.
That's the hookup of all hookups.
Yeah.
Well, how about, just quickly, I was listening to Up First.
First Up,
right? Like, he's switching around like nobody's business. Like, and they said that LeBron's having a party tonight.
Well, he's in town. He was in Chicago last night.
Yeah, he's having a party here in Toronto today.
Where is it? Down at Drake?
No,
Drake doesn't have a spot
it's
anymore.
It's at King and Bathurst, EFS, Everything for Sale.
I have no idea.
EFX.
EFX, is that what it is?
So isn't that a bar? That's a bar.
Yeah. That's where he's doing it. That's what they said.
Well, what is the purpose?
I have no idea.
Like, he loves Toronto. I remember we had the former GM of the Cavs on. We've had him on a bunch, David Griffin. And he always said his concern was not that Cleveland was going to blow the series against the Raptors. Like, this speaks to his confidence level in retrospect. He's like, I knew we were going to beat them. It was just a matter of whether or not we were going to beat ourselves into pushing it to, like, 7 games.
Right.
Because in the NBA playoffs, there's always 2 days off in between games. And he's like, when we would land in Toronto, these guys would just evaporate in the air. Like, the wheels would hit the tarmac, and these guys would just disappear.
Cockroaches just into the walls.
Into the night.
Yeah,
into the night.
Yes.
And this guy was, and Griffin, he detailed it. He's like, I was, like, up all night in the hotel thinking, what are these guys doing in Toronto right now? Because he knew the reputation of the city. And in the NBA, the reputation is on a completely different level than any other league. That's my understanding. And LeBron in particular really enjoys Toronto. Like, he's up here all the time. In the summertime, he's up all the time. And I guess he's got connections. He probably would anyway. Anywhere. Yeah. He's LeBron James, I would think. If he calls up and looks for a reservation, he's probably going to get it. But that might speak to the fact that the Lakers, they got a win last night. Their season's over. They're tanking anyway.
Right.
He's like, whatever. I'm not going to the playoffs for the first time in how many years? 12, 13 years?
Well, he's not going to the finals for the first time in nine.
Nine years.
That's crazy.
Not going to
Forget
the
about
finals.
The playoffs. He's not going to the finals.
That's right. Well, actually, I got a beef with the first up guys as well that I want to point out.
But they just
careful.
Pointed that out
they
this morning.
A bit, didn't they?
Did no, they
steal
didn't.
A bit of ours?
They were, I was mortified last night on Twitter. Jeannie Bouchard was on Twitter last night. I don't know if you guys saw this.
I did not see that.
So Jeannie was on Twitter, and I guess she sent out a tweet. You know, I haven't been on Twitter a lot. She's big on Instagram, and I think she's on Snapchat. She's always been on Twitter.
She's an influencer.
She is an influencer, and she's got a big backing and a lot of followers. And
yeah.
Anyway, she jumps on Twitter last night and says something along the lines of, hey, back on Twitter, I'm thinking about getting back into things. Is there anyone I should be following?
Yeah.
And all of our boys in the morning, Landsberg, Koliakovo, Karolnik, all start tweeting her, pleading for a follow back. Pleading with Jeannie Bouchard for some recognition on Twitter.
So yeah, that's embarrassing.
I was quite embarrassed for our guys. Like, come on, just relax.
Well, she's made it very clear. The only person she's following at TSN is Mark Masters.
She loves Mark Masters.
That's the only person she will follow. So, I mean, that would be almost a pathetic pleading.
I thought it was groveling.
We're not doubling down from the Overdrive account and going,
Al, you're under strict orders. Block Jeannie Bouchard on Twitter.
Yeah. I want El Chapo. That's the guy who blasted the judge. Yeah. That's the guy I want the follow from. We need the sound of El Chapo blasting the judge in the face.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
We got to be careful. You can't call him El Chapo. It's El Chapo.
I said Chapo.
I heard a And
I apologize. There's a big difference between El Chapo and El Chapo.
Right.
But El Chapo is one of our favorites.
Chapovalov is one of our favorites. He's at Indian Hills. He's winning and rapping after wins and stuff. I mean, this guy.
It's great, isn't it? I love the personality. I just love it.
He's feeling good.
Okay, I misspoke. Chapo, it's not Chapo. It's Chapo.
Chapo.
El Chapo.
Chapovalov.
I want to follow from him.
Yes. I don't even know if he's on Twitter, but if he is, that's the kind of stuff we will grovel over.
Yes.
We will plead and beg with Shapovalov for a follow back, but we're not doing that for Jeannie Bouchard.
No.
And if anyone, you know, if one of us does it, it's one thing, but Landsberg, Koliakovo, these are...
You know what'll happen? She'll like follow O out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, she'll be like, I like that guy's Twitter game. He's funny, you know?
Maybe. She might already follow.
But then he'll ask her for a jersey or something, or he'll send me a couple rackets, and he'll get blocked.
Right, but not her own rackets. Go get Serena Williams to send me a racket.
He'll send her a note and say, hey, any chance you can get Federer's racket from a Grand Slam?
Yeah.
And like she'll be like, all right, give it to this guy.
You're done. You're blocked. The Leafs are back in action tonight, and Chicago's in town. And the last time these two teams played was early in the season. One of the more entertaining games of the year.
It was.
Goaltending was optional that night for both teams. It was brutal. The 7-6 OT winner for the Leafs. And Morgan Rielly scored the OT winner.
That's right.
And I was thinking about it today because yesterday we got into it, you know, extensively about what happened on Monday night. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate circumstance online where people started connecting dots that weren't there in the end. And eventually Morgan got cleared. But I wouldn't be surprised if it affected his game tonight.
I wouldn't be surprised
at all if he didn't look himself tonight.
I said this yesterday, and I don't know how you feel about this, Craig. Like, I think it's great that they were able to shine a light and use their platform for stuff like that. So that's on the table. And even the Maple Leafs did a terrific job with it. But all I could think about was how Morgan Rielly felt Monday night till Tuesday at 2:30 in the afternoon. Because... you know, he's driving away from the rink from an embarrassing loss. And then sounds like he got the call back when it started to...
I think he called back.
Somebody must have sent him a note. Yeah, but he goes back and sits down. Can you imagine? It's got nothing to do with how if he played poor that night or whatever. It's got something to do. This is a societal, you know, massive issue. And everyone's pointed at him. I guarantee you he barely slept a wink that night. And it could affect him in tonight's game.
Well, I think one of the, you know, when you heard Morgan talk yesterday, he says, it's not something I would say. It's not something I did say.
Right.
You know, so I thought, you know, but when your character is assailed like that, and it was, I mean, and people are completely wrong, you know what, let there be an investigation. Let's just see how it unfolds, and let's see what the evidence tells us. But for him to be assailed, and I think to your point, Jamie, is that, you know, this is a young man now who is being questioned, right? And then I read an article yesterday. Matt Larkin from the Hockey News talked about it. He had interviewed a former player, Brock McGillis.
Yeah, I remember Brock.
Who's come out as gay. And, you know, he said, oh, it's where, you know, it's what the kids learn and everything. So I think that I don't know that, but I do know this. And I think it speaks to Kyle Dubas and to what Morgan Riley said yesterday. You know, you're trying to eradicate it so that people don't have these thoughts in their head, so and that it's not accepted. And that what you hope, and Kyle talked about it yesterday, is that within the building, that people within the building say, wait a second, that's wrong. You're not getting away with that, right? And you stop it right then and there. I think that is the ultimate goal. But, you know, how prevalent it is at the younger ages, it kind of was alarming to me to read that article by Matt Larkin of the Hockey News and Brock McGillis talking about it.
Well, and, you know, when it comes to hockey players, especially a guy like Morgan Riley, who was a great junior player, played on the World Juniors, fifth overall pick, right when he got to the NHL, you know, he's been in the biggest hockey market in the world.
Yeah.
This is a guy who is very trained in terms of pushing away the white noise and dealing with the criticisms that are going to be inevitable. But those are germane to his play.
Right.
You know, he knows when he has a bad game, guys like me and us and others are going to be like, well, he played poorly. And I think he's fine with that. You know, maybe you never get the thickest skin, but I don't get the impression like Morgan Riley has ever been eaten up by this marketplace. If anything, I think he's embraced it.
Right.
And I think he's cherished the idea of being a Maple Leaf. He says that on the record all the time. Yes. I love being a Maple Leaf. Yeah. I love it. But this was completely out of his control, and it had nothing to do with him as a hockey player. This was about him as a person. And even though, again, he was exonerated and now he's off the hook, it's still, he had to go through it. You know, and I'm sure it was very difficult for him. I don't think a scenario like that is something that once the decision comes down by the NHL, once you speak and you walk off the podium, it's just erased from your memory. That's right. There's no chance that's the case.
Well, when it first, you know, when it was first alleged on Monday night, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, obviously, Kevin Pillar's situation comes up, right?
Yep.
And so now you're right about the person sitting there going, well, I haven't even thought that, let alone say it, right? But now you're trying to think, okay, how do I speak to that? What do I say? You know, because you're right, he is an eloquent speaker. He's talked about his love for the city, and you know, he's been a supporter of LGBTQ. And I think that's really important. You know, you can play movement, like these are all important efforts by the players, right? So when you now get accused of something like that, it stings. There's no question about it.
But even though he's been cleared of that, like, I still believe there's 10% out there that haven't done the due diligence that will associate him with the slur. Like, that's, you know, that's
agreed.
The guy. You know, like, 6 months from now, somebody will still have a comment about, well, Morgan Riley, he said this, and they won't get the facts straight. But they got what they believed the online. And
well,
you can't change that. That's ignorance.
That's Fox News.
Well,
yeah.
But furthermore, the conspiracy theorists that think, hey, I still think he said it, but the NHL's fallen on the sword.
Right,
because
he's a Leaf. I saw that last night.
Oh, that's going to be out there. Absolutely. And Morgan Riley's going to have
conspiracy
to deal with it.
Conspiracy theorists, yeah. Oh, I know. You're right.
It's out there. Absolutely.
I know. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, you know, in terms of the way he acted or reacted to it all, I think he reacted the best way he possibly could. You know, some people are trying to link it to the captaincy and all that. I'm not sure this particular issue factors in, but I think what he proved, and we'll see how he plays tonight and the rest of the season, because he's an incredibly important piece to the team.
Very important.
He's in that conversation, you know, in terms of the captaincy. For sure he's in that conversation.
Here's what I would say to Morgan Riley, just with all the people that are out there that are really stupid and really ignorant and, you know, the conspiracy theorists. I'll quote Albert Einstein. The difference between stupidity and genius is that genius has its limits.
Albert.
Hold Albert.
I like it.
Genius has its limits. Stupidity does it. You never. There is no depth of stupidity that we have reached.
Well, there's a lot of people circling the New York Giants and David Gettleman in particular, their GM, and they've decided that he's been labeled one of those words, and it doesn't start with a G. We'll get into that. Odell Beckham Jr. is off to the Browns. We're going to catch up with Phil Savage, the former GM of the Browns and now NFL analyst. He'll join us in about 10 minutes, get his take on what happened last night. Le'Veon Bell is now off to the New York Jets.
I know.
Did his strategy pay off?
But, I mean, the NFL right now is pretty exciting. Like, is Cleveland like that? Are they legit?
They're definitely interesting. And they're talented. I'm not fully committed to them.
In yet?
Well, you still got to see it, man. Yeah. Like,
amen, hallelujah. Amen, hallelujah.
You still have
Brian,
to see it, right? Like, we've been fooled before.
I like your term, your word. It's interesting. Hey, listen, off season, all these players moving around, the excitement in the fan bases, the vitriol in some of the fan bases for some of the moves that have been made. It's all good. Yeah. I love it. But the Browns is a
it's a wait and see situation.
Hey, you played in St. Louis. You know what they say it's the show me state.
Yeah,
you know, I'm from Missouri.
That's right. Now, like Odell Beckham Jr. is a great talent, you know, and Kareem Hunt's a great talent. People forget that they picked him up, and he will be suspended. He may not even play this year, but there's a lot of characters in that room all of a sudden. And I remember in Toronto, the 2012 leading into the 2013 season with the Jays. Remember they made the deal with the Marlins. They brought in Burley, Johnson, Reyes. They went out there and acquired Dickey. They signed a bunch of guys, brought back John Gibbons, and they went out and won 74 games. Everyone had anointed them as the World Series champs. They were going to win 105 games. And I'm not saying the Browns are going to replicate that, but you don't win awards because of what you do in the offseason.
Right.
And it's March. They don't play football games in March. So we'll see what Phil Savage has to say about it. From the Browns' perspective, the Giants, Le'Veon Bell, Earl Thomas is off to the Ravens. Ray's coming up. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away. Leafs Rangers, Saturday, March 23rd, and every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you will have the chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, this Maple Leaf also spent time playing in the WHA.
Ooh.
Old school. This Maple Leaf also spent time playing in the WHA.
I think I know who it is. I actually think I know who it is.
All right, go ahead.
Well, didn't you say he scored 35 goals in the...
I can't repeat past clues. That's not the way it works.
I don't want
to
say
it. Keep it to yourself.
I'll keep it to myself. I don't want to mess with it.
That's a Saturday night game. I mean, the Rangers aren't very good, but still. I mean, these are big tickets.
Yeah, for sure.
And Chicago's in town tonight.
It's going to be a good game.
It'll be a very good game. We've got it for you at 7 p.m., pregame at 6:30. So we're out of here in a couple of hours.
You talked about the last game, the Leafs and the Hawks play. The Hawks are exciting. Like they play, they just get after. Jonathan Toews, comeback player of the year, no question in my mind. He's scored 30 goals. I think he's 6 points away from matching his career high in points. Yeah. You talk about a comeback.
He's had a great year.
Yes, he has.
And they've got a couple of young players that, like Saad's actually come back to life a little bit. DeBrincat, he's a player. Like they, you know, he can shoot the puck, and like they've got some guys that I think Stan has tried to infuse along the way. And I mean, they need a goaltending. Like Crawford's back now, but like, you know, when you had Ward, who is at the end of his career, you know, it was a battle for a long time, and they're hanging in there. They're right in that playoff race.
They are.
You know,
I mean, Stan made a good trade too, getting Dylan Strome.
Like he really woke up when he got there.
I mean, Dylan's fit perfectly in there. I mean, it's helped Toews as much as it's helped Dylan.
Right.
To get in there. I mean, he's shown that he's more than capable of being a really good second line.
But how
center.
About Arizona? They're in the playoffs.
Yeah. Which is good too.
No
but they're
kidding.
Battling, but they're battling, you know, Chicago's right there with them, right? And you know,
buddy
and Rick
Bruce
Talkett's done a nice job.
Yeah, and they've been banged up. Like even the guy they traded Strome for isn't Nick Schmaltz, right?
Yeah,
and Schmaltz has been out for the year.
Yeah.
Like they've got I think one injury ended up, but I think they've got seven regulars out of the lineup.
Well, they got Christian Dvorak back. Stepan's out of the lineup
right now.
But Christian Dvorak had a setback earlier in the preseason.
Their starting goalie's been out almost all year.
Ranta, But Talk's done a nice job.
Yeah, they've done a great job. The fact that they're in the playoffs really speaks volumes to their whole operation.
Yep.
Ray Ferraro will join us in about a half an hour. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. So the NFL is on fire right now. Yeah. There is a lot of movement. There have been some big trades. Antonio Brown earlier in the week. Last night, Odell Beckham Jr. goes from the Giants to the Browns for a first, a third, and Jabril Peppers.
Hot take of the day. And the Patriots will still win the Super Bowl next year.
That's
They've
the
lost
amazing
Trey
thing,
Flowers,
right?
Trent Brown. Don't worry, they'll just keep retooling, and everybody will be hating on the Patriots. And Belichick just goes along, watches what he does, and everybody, oh, look, what are the Patriots? Yeah, they're just positioning themselves for the Super Bowl.
Well, let's see what Phil Savage has to say about that. Former GM of the Browns, SiriusXM NFL analyst, currently the GM in the AAF with the Arizona Hotshots. Great handle.
Yes.
What do you make of that take, Phil, that even with all this activity, it doesn't really matter because the Pats are still the best team in the NFL?
Well, good evening, gentlemen. Hope you're doing well. And, yeah, the teams that have been the most active and have spent the most money were those that really were not in the playoffs last year. So the good teams usually let this first wave of free agency go by. And when you really go back and examine it from a year-to-year basis, most of the time, the teams that win March aren't necessarily going to win January, and that's probably going to be the case this year as well.
Phil, you know, as a general manager, and I mean in a great football market like Cleveland was, you know, I mean, there's such an excitement around the NFL, 365-day a league where there's lots of news. How much of an influence is it, you know, with respect to the ownership trying to get positive vibes from their fan base when you hit this point in the season?
Well, I think for the Browns, you know, over the time since they've returned to Cleveland, you know, it's been the seasons have not been enjoyable, and the hope has been anchored in the off season. And for the first time, really since 2007, when I was still there, we won 10 games. We had a very positive entry into the off season, and obviously didn't get it done the next year. But for the first time really in over a decade, they ended this past year on a high note. John Dorsey in his first year as the GM, now moving into his second year. And, you know, if you look at these NFL organizations almost like on a bell curve, they really believe that they're on the front edge of a window that's going to open for them where they're going to win a lot of games over the next 4 or 5 years because of the play of their rookie quarterback, Baker Mayfield. And so they've decided to make a big move for Odell Beckham Jr. They make that trade last night. Look, they will sell tickets, and it will create a lot of enthusiasm for this team. We've seen the odds makers jump on board with the Browns as far as the AFC North. And so they feel like that now is the time to go for it. And you look at some of the other teams in the NFL, namely the Giants, who traded that player away, their timeline is different. They're closing the window on what will be the Eli Manning era and a couple Super Bowl wins. And so now they're trying to get prepared for the future by accumulating more draft picks and putting themselves in position to perhaps draft the quarterback of the future here in April, or perhaps even next year. But I would assume that with two number ones, one of those choices for New York is going to go towards a quarterback.
With Phil Savage, former NFL GM, current GM in the AAF and SiriusXM NFL analyst. As for the Giants, I mean, clearly they realize they're not a very good team. They haven't been for a couple of years. But the idea of them paying all that money to Odell Beckham Jr. and then going on the record and say, we didn't pay him to trade him, and then you get back a decent return, but by no means a haul. You know, the 17th pick, a third rounder, a late third rounder, and Jabril Peppers is a mediocre safety. He's a fine young player, but why would they do that? Why would they pay him that money and now take the hit for a couple of years and then flip him for a haul that honestly isn't that impressive?
Yeah, I think the reality is that there's probably more to the story. There's probably more in the backdrop. I mean, look at the Steelers. They got a 3 and a 5 for Antonio Brown when at one point in time they were saying they'd take nothing less than a 1. But I think that these teams, when they move on from these players, these superstar players, they know what all the warts are. And the new team doesn't know what all those warts are just yet. But I think with the Giants, they just got to a point where they said, you know, we've probably got one season left with Eli Manning. We have to get prepared for the future. This is one of the assets that we have that could at least fetch a couple of draft picks and a decent player in Jabril Peppers. They had moved on from Landon Collins. They were not going to pay him. you know, $14 million a year like he got from the Washington Redskins. And I'm sure in their minds they feel like, okay, we got a player that's not to the level of Collins, but he's going to be a cheaper version. We have a little more flexibility in the draft now. And, again, I think this move is all about, you know, 2019, but more specifically 2020 and beyond, because with now the 6th pick and the 17th pick, whether they stay there or try to move up or slide around, the fact is I think they will take a quarterback with one of those two choices. And Dave Gettleman, the GM, he made his reputation in Carolina with some of the draft picks he made down there. And he's a pure football guy, so I think that their timeline is so different from the Browns. The Browns are on the front edge of winning, and now the Giants are really closing the era of what had been a winning era under Eli Manning up until the last couple of years. But I think now they've pretty much admitted that, hey, we're getting ready to go through a huge rebuild there in New York.
Well, how about Le'Veon Bell, who made a very drastic decision a year ago where he sat out for the whole year. He never signed the franchise tag, so he left all that money on the table. And then he gets to free agency. He signs a four-year deal, $52.5 million with the Jets. I'm not quite certain what the guarantees are yet. But based on his strategy and where he ends up and, you know, the framework of the contract with a bad team in New York with the Jets, do you feel like Le'Veon Bell, his whole strategy from a year ago, actually paid off?
You know, I think you could argue it one way or the other. The guarantees in this contract around $35 million is what's being reported. And so obviously he sacrificed 14 this past season. But the thing that he does get is he gets two additional years on a contract that he would not have gotten had he signed that original offer from Pittsburgh. Remember the five-year, $70 million deal, 14 a year that he turned down a couple of years ago. And he went through two seasons of being tagged. One, he got paid. The other, he didn't show up, didn't report for duty. And so he gets those additional years of guarantees from the Jets. But, man, he missed a year of football, and I still don't think that when you crunch all the numbers, there's really a way that he, I think he lost 12 to 14 million. Any way you cut it, I don't see him making up for that. The thing that he did make up for is the fact that he's now got two additional years beyond what he would have gotten from Pittsburgh. I want to say that was at least 2 years ago when he was offered 5 years at $70 billion. So, look, his agent, Adisa Bakari, will sell it one way. I'm sure that other people that are in that world will sell it another. But the fact is he has moved on from the Pittsburgh Steelers, and now they go on without he nor Antonio Brown.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it. We'll do it again down the road.
Guys, enjoyed the time, and be well. Thanks.
There's Phil Savage, the former GM of the Browns and SiriusXM NFL analyst. You know, I'm not sleeping on the Steelers either. I mean, that's another thing. I know how they played down the stretch and they melted and it was ugly and there was turmoil there. And Antonio Brown's a great player. Le'Veon Bell's a great player. They still got Roethlisberger. They still got a run game. They got Juju Smith-Schuster. They got Mike Tomlin.
They got an offensive line.
They got a line. I'm not sleeping on Pittsburgh yet.
Hey, listen, I just know that, at the end of the, I go back to Bo Schembechler. Bo Schembechler's great quote, it's all about the team, the team, the team. That's what the Steelers are. It's about the team. Mm-hmm. It's what the Patriots are. So it's great. Phil's comment about, in Cleveland, the regular seasons were so abysmal. So hope anchored. Hope came in the form of offseason moves, right? Well, good. That's what you got to do when you're right at the bottom of the league and you're terrible, right? I get it.
Yeah.
But to his point, all these teams that are making these acquisitions are all bad teams. The Oakland Raiders are terrible.
It happens every single year. The best teams are generally very quiet. They
because
build through the draft.
They don't need to do anything. They need to tinker.
They tinker, but they build through the draft. You know, and they wait for the next wave, and they go out there and they find a guy who didn't get the money he thought he was going to get, and he's got a chip on his shoulder, and they bring him into the fold, and it pays off. And then when he's going to get paid next year after he's won a Super Bowl with them or won 12 or 13 games, they say, thank you very much. We'll look for your replacement.
Yep.
And that's exactly what the Pats have been doing forever, the Steelers in a lot of ways. You know, a lot of these really high-quality teams. You know, the Eagles have been quiet. The Rams have been quiet. You know, you have that money because you're not a very good team, so you haven't spent it on players. And listen, it's not that Odell Beckham Jr. can't play. He's a big upgrade in Cleveland, and they're a very exciting team. They got tons of talent.
And with Baker Mayfield there, I mean, he's got a playmaker on the other end of that. Of that passing.
And they got
Odell,
Mayfield.
OBJ is good.
He can play. Jarvis Landry can play. They got a tight end. They got running backs now. When Kareem Hunt comes back, Nick Chubb.
But you got to put it together.
And you still got to put it together.
Both are saying a wait and see approach.
Well, Earl Thomas goes to the Ravens, like, and with John Harbaugh and what they do. I know they lost Terrell Suggs. Earl Thomas is a better player than Terrell Suggs right now. And you know, so you know now the Ravens who just find a way. Flacco, see ya. You know what, Terrell Suggs, we've loved you, but we're moving on. Like, I use the term all the time. Dispassionate assessment. When you're in a salary cap world, you better look at everything dispassionately. You want to fall in love, you want to think you can't live without them. You can live without any player. You can. There's not one player you cannot live without.
You have to be ruthless.
Yeah.
You have to be. And it's funny how the worst teams in the league never take their P's and Q's from the best teams in the league.
And it's not like the secret's locked up in Fort Knox, Brian.
No. Bill Belichick is showing you the tape.
Yeah.
he's cutting guys. He's, you know, guys that you can't believe he's moved on from. And then every year it's like, I can't believe he did that. Well, they're going to take a step back. No, 13 wins, another Super Bowl.
2 decades.
Do you think he'll move away from Gronk at some point, or just Gronk will move away from him?
Yeah, Gronk will just retire, I think, if anything else.
One or the other. But I would say this is that, I mean, if Gronk's moving away from Bill, it's because Bill has let Gronk know, I'm going to let you go out graciously.
He gave him a whiff. Like, Bill probably gave him a heads up, like, hey, this may be coming, and Gronk's like, I'm retiring.
You use the word ruthless, though. But Lawyer Malloy, who was a very, very good player for the Patriots, they wanted him to take less money back. This was in the early 2000s. And he wouldn't take it. So they said, you're not going to be around here.
Right.
But Bill Belichick didn't cut him at the beginning of training camp. He waited till the end when he knew there would be a real market for Lawyer Malloy. Because he respected Lawyer Malloy so much that he didn't want to just put him out there on the market when there was a whole lot of players out there and he wouldn't get, you know, compensated what he would. So, you know, even though we use the word ruthless, you know, Bill Belichick had so much respect for Lawyer Malloy. He said, even though it's not going to work here, I'm going to set you up so that you can take advantage. And he did. He signed with the Buffalo Bills. And so, you know, you can be dispassionate and ruthless at times. But, you know, I think with the reason I bring that up is because I think Bill Belichick, there's no doubt that he has great respect for Rob Gronkowski.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's still a people business.
Right.
You know, you're still interacting and you need to show respect in order to receive respect. And I think, you know, Belichick does it better than anyone else. He puts forth the front. He's very different behind the scenes as well. There's an update on who will have the ball opening day for the Blue Jays and how much beer sales may be going up or down at the Rogers Center. We'll tell you about that next. All right, Rays coming up in about 15 minutes ahead of the Maple Leaf game tonight. Chicago's in town. The pregame at 6:30 right here on TSN Radio. Jerry's percentage is at 5:30. I don't know if we had a Jerry's on who would be the starting pitcher opening day for the Blue Jays, but Marcus Stroman is the answer to that. And I'm not overly surprised. They don't have options.
You wouldn't have bet, but you would have bet on Stroman if that was Jerry's a month ago?
Yeah, I would have for a couple of reasons. One, again, they don't have options. They don't. Like, who else is going to start? It's either him or Sanchez. Those are the two guys.
Right.
Their staff is not deep. And it's veteran guys who they brought in on the cheap that are not going to get the ball on opening day. I think Marcus Stroman would really care about this. So I think they understand they don't want to start a bigger problem with him tweeting or Instagramming. Right. I wish I had the ball. I can't believe they don't have faith in me or whatever. And Aaron Sanchez really hasn't pitched for 2 years.
No. It's amazing,
so
isn't it?
Who else was it going to be? Of course it's going to be Marcus Stroman.
And there certainly is some type of marquee in being the opening day pitcher. It really is. It's something to be named the opening day pitcher is – holds a lot of prestige.
Absolutely. Well, it's the team saying you're our guy. Yeah. You know, that you are the horse.
Have they
for
announced
us.
Anything? And I apologize if I miss. Have they announced anything about honoring Roy Halladay for his Hall of Fame induction?
I haven't seen anything on it. I would assume at some point, like Hall of Fame weekend, I'm sure there'll be, you know, there'll
be
representatives
down there.
Just
wondering what the Blue Jays down at the Rogers Center if they're.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll do something. It's a matter of timing.
I mean, but he was an opening day pitcher for Like, you know, I think about something like opening day where you have Holiday and on the back of the mound with his number and you honor him like on the first day to just say, hey, this is one of the great Blue Jays in history. He just was elected to the Hall of Fame, something like that. Because, I mean, you think about that. I mean, what would be the number on his opening day starts?
Oh, I would.
Whenever
think,
he was available, he did it, right?
Yeah, and even in Philly too. When he got to Philly, he was on a great staff, but he was the guy.
But did you see what Bryce Harper did with the number?
No,
in
I
Philly,
didn't.
He said.
Well, he's not wearing number 34, is what he said. Yeah,
he said that's Roy Halladay's.
Right,
number.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No,
that's
I think
good.
You know Harper's done a pretty good job of
real awareness,
ingratiating himself.
Well, when Harper signed, you see the plane that he landed on a private jet and like got off, like, and they had. Like the welcoming committee, I just thought to myself, I'm like, this guy is. I mean, he had money before, but now he has. That was a serious contract,
biggest contract in history.
How about Mike Walton of the Caps play-by-play on the radio getting mad when they were in Philadelphia that day and they had a welcome video while the Capitals were playing there. He wasn't too impressed.
Oh, that's a great troll job.
Yeah, isn't that great?
That's like an outstanding.
And the Flyers, like, you know.
As they should.
Play-by-play guys, they get so worked up sometimes.
I saw also down at the Rogers Center this year, and it's only going to be like at one spot on each level. They're going to sell $5 beers. But I think it's only like one of the... What would you call it? Like the...
A kiosk
or whatever. Like
I would
one
just
of
go
them.
And stay there.
Well, what's the point of only having it at one? Why not have it everywhere all over the building? Like, you're going to make people line up for 15 minutes?
That's what they'll do.
That's basically what's going to happen. That's what it sounds like anyway, unless something changes between now and opening day. But, like, hey, that's cool. I'm not going to complain about $5 beers. I don't think anybody is, considering how much you get gouged at any of these sporting events.
Right.
But it's going to... You're going to miss like three innings.
Exactly. The lineup will be around the building.
So you go down with 10 buddies, right? You just kind of stagger the line. You just keep going through, drink your beers.
You'll be limited to buying two at a time,
of course.
Instead of 14.
Rays coming up. Jerry's percentages at 5:30.